With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
Hello, welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. Finally, the Pakistan series, the England-Pakistan series is done, and England ended up victors with a 4-3 final series victory. Actually, after a quite compelling series, it was a bit of a mismatch, that final game. So we'll delve into that in this podcast and into the series generally, into the impact it may have had in Pakistan and on England's chances in the T20 World Cup, which obviously follows in the next few weeks. We've also got a special guest tonight, Sam Robson, one of the key members of the Middlesex team over the last few years, who finally won promotion back to Division 1 in the County Championship after quite a nice climax to the season, actually, last week. So, Sam, welcome to the podcast. And we're going to talk in the second half more about the county season and the Strauss report and all that, which has caused so much controversy. But what's the feeling like having got promotion?
Yeah, everyone's over the moon. I mean, yeah, first of all, thanks for having me on the show. But yeah, everyone's over the moon. I think, you know, it was a good season. And we obviously got off to a good start for those that follow it all and whatever. So we were pretty confident from pretty early on, but we had a little bit of a dip in the middle of the summer. And so then to come back and finish as well as we did and get promoted was really good. So yeah, everyone's really pleased. A few hangovers have been nursed over the last couple of days as well, but
glad to hear it.
Absolutely. No, it's been good fun. So yeah, we've had a bit of a celebration yesterday, most of the boys sort of who live in London, and then yeah, up in Worcester it was a great day for the club. Really, we had most of the office staff and supporters and friends and family and whatever up there as well. So after quite a tough few years, it's been a great season.
Good to hear actually that you celebrate, because I remember, you know, winning championships and things like that for Middlesex, you know, in the days gone by, and the season just dissipated and we didn't have a celebration. It just sort of everyone, you know, disappeared off to their winter contracts and you handed your sponsored car back and it was almost like a bit of an anti-climax.
Yeah, no, it wasn't like that on this occasion. We gave it a good nudge, but yeah, we've got a good group of guys at the club now, and most of the young lads all get on pretty well together and live together and live close. We've got a decent chunk of the boys living in London now as well, so it does make it easier to sort of celebrate wins and whatever and sort of seasons like this, because I think, as you mentioned, I think it's sort of been mentioned in the past, sometimes one of the challenges for Middlesex being a big London club is that guys are spread out all over the place, and sort of building that camaraderie sometimes, you know, in the past may have been a challenge, but as I said, we've had a good few days.
Good. Well, we'll delve into the county season with you in a bit later. I know you haven't had much chance to watch the England-Pakistan matches because you've been on the field. Simon, you and I have watched them pretty closely. What did you make of the final game?
It's weird, isn't it? It was anticlimactic, as you said at the start. If you end up batting first in subcontinental conditions, the way you obviously can take control of a game is just get a massive score. And everyone seems to want to bat second in the series. I mean, I think there was one toss where England decided to bat first and it actually lost the game, but everyone else wanted to bat second. But it wasn't necessarily the case that you batted second and won the game. But the two games that England won batting first, they got a big score, and that just puts so much pressure, doesn't it, on the batting side. And if you have the added bonus as well of getting out Pakistan's top two early on, you almost feel there's nowhere to go. You almost feel the game was over, actually. Once Rizwan was out today and Barber early on, you just think, well, almost game over. And it was almost as if Pakistan accepted their fate. They had a bit of a dash, but I mean, they got thrashed, didn't they? I mean, it was a huge win for England, and two huge wins actually for them in the last two games, because they were under pressure 3-2 down, and they absolutely crunched Pakistan on Friday with that scintillating batting performance on the chase. And then they did exactly the same today. I mean, they've got some power in that batting lineup. I mean, if it fires, then they're a match for anyone. It's when it doesn't quite fire, it seems to me, and they get a sort of middling score, and then they're a bit vulnerable, as probably quite a lot of sides are, with their bowling, because teams bowling can go around the park.
You know, the feeling that hits me the strongest at the moment, just currently watching this one day series, this T20 series, is it just makes me wince every time, because I see these bowlers pounding into bowl, hurling it down, and occasionally, a slower ball and so on, and just getting pumped out of the park so often with some brilliant shots by the England players. And the reason why it makes me wince particularly at the moment is because I had a hip operation last Tuesday to replace the hip that probably did quite sterling work for Middlesex for about 15 years. But it's that pounding of the body, particularly for fast bowlers, which just in the end makes your hip give out. I'm quite relieved I let it done, but I am feeling a bit like I've been tackled by Jonah Lomu.
So the recovery's going well, Yoz, is it? It's what, five or six days in?
5 or 6 days, yeah. I'm sort of shuffling around the house now. I don't want to be seen with crutches very often. For those who ex-bowlers or ex-hard labourers of whatever kind, I mean, I think hip operations now are incredibly good. And we used to joke, actually, in the old days about a guy who played for Middlesex called Graham Barlow, who was a very athletic, fit cricketer. He played for England a little bit as well. And his hips just deteriorated to the extent he waddled around, looking like a... In fact, we called him Dougie Barder. We called him Dougie after the famous World War pilot who I think lost either one or both of his legs. And he wasn't lucky enough to have the kind of hip surgery that you can have now, which makes it almost better than new. So fingers crossed.
Well, good luck on that, and congratulations. You've managed to have it done, and it's not been a... sounds like...
So you're next,
I'm next.
You? You're
well,
next,
I hope
right?
so, sometime in the future, yeah. Anyway, it's like old men talking about their hips, their
injuries. Yeah, so going back to the bowling, I mean, I thought England's today, their batting against the Pakistan bowling was outstanding. I mean, Phil Salt, we saw him totally decimate the Pakistan bowlers in the sixth game. I feel there's an element of luck about the way he bats. I mean, you have to hand it to him for his audacity and his skill as well. I mean, his hand speed and so on. But it seems to me he is a bit hit or miss. And that particular innings, he just hit everything. He kept hitting it off the middle of the bat, sailing into the distance. Fantastically destructive innings. You just couldn't bowl to him. Today, well, kind of sawn off a little bit by David Milan's rather sluggish running. But then Milan took up the cudgels and smacked them all over the place instead. So, I mean, the skill of that. And someone like Ben Duckett, it's not even in the squad for the T20s, and his range of shots and his hand speed and his dexterity, absolutely fantastic. And of course, we haven't mentioned Harry Brook either, who to me is like sort of Kevin Peterson and Joe Root rolled into one.
Yeah, well, two or three have really advanced their cause, haven't they, on this trip? I think that's one of the things to say. I mean, we know the talent that England have, and Brooke has definitely advanced his cause, and so too has Duckett. And not necessarily, obviously, for the T20 World Cup, as you mentioned, he's not in the squad, but possibly for the 50-over World Cup in the subcontinent in over a year's time. You know, he showed his dexterity against the spinners, sweeping, reverse sweeping. He's had a pretty good series. And Brooke, we mentioned this last week on the podcast. I mean, he just looks a high-class player. But actually interesting to bring in Sam here on Harry Brooke. You know, what the talk has been in the game about, you know, the young talent that may or may not be around in the English game, but about perhaps Brooke in particular. I don't know how much of him you'd have come across, Sam.
Yeah, not a heap, but funnily enough, I actually played him, I reckon, about 5 years ago in a club game in Sydney. I was out playing grade cricket for a few months in the off-season, and I'd heard the name. I think he'd already been in England under 19 system and whatever. And it was, yeah, as I said, it was just a club game. But he whacked them all over the park that day. And I remember that stood out. And then so I kept an eye on him the next few years after that, or the few years after that. And I think the talk always that he was unbelievably talented and had a lot of ability, but it's sort of been the last 18 months where he's really made it click. And I think the other thing to mention is it's been in all cricket, hasn't it, really? Like, his four-day cricket at the start of this year was magnificent. I think he opened a little bit a couple of years ago, and I think he shuffled down the order this year, maybe a little bit last year as well. But, yeah, it's all clicked in all cricket. So, yeah, amazingly talented player. And, yeah, as you said, it'll be interesting to see how he continues to go over the next 12 months.
Yeah, I mean, he seems to have sort of inked his name in England's T20 side, because I mean there are a few players missing from what's been their regular side in the last couple of years. Of course, Bairstow, Roy, and Owen Morgan. So there are some slots there, and you'd think Brooke has, I mean, significantly advanced his case. There's Ben Stokes to come back, Josh Butler to come back. So there's some decisions to be made. What has been interesting about this series, Yoz, is that actually everyone's contributed somewhere along the line to give the selectors something to think about. I mean, you mentioned that scintillating innings from Phil Salt. He was actually at one stage on course for England's fastest ever T20 international 100. It's 42 balls by Liam Livingstone. He had a chance of that, but they almost ran out of time the other day because they knocked off the runs at the other end. So Brooke obviously advanced his case. And I mean, David Milan has had a bit of a struggle, actually. At times he's looked, I think he's even admitted it himself, he's been out of sorts. And yet, lo and behold, you know, when it mattered, last game, decisive game, he comes up with, you know, something special today. And the best runs per ball of any of the England batters today. So, yeah, lots of good things in the batting for England to sort of take forward to Australia, where they go now for three T20s and then the T20 World Cup.
Of course, the bad thing is it's a selectorial headache, because who are they going to actually pick for that when they come to the business end of the World T20 and all that? There's going to be a contest, I suppose, to open with Butler between Hales and Salt.
Yeah,
it may be that Hales gets the nod initially because he's got a great reputation in Australia, having played in the Big Bash, done very well. But slightly bouncier pitches might suit him. Salt, I also has played in the Big Bash.
Yes, he has,
pretty
yeah.
Well.
Yeah,
so
he has.
There's going to be a contest there. Milan will probably feel a bit better playing in Australia because the ball comes onto the bat slightly easier. He likes the higher bouncing pitches and so on. So, you know, there's a sort of top four, and Stokes and Harry Brooke as well, to factor into it. Brooke is interesting, actually. He was coached by Martin Speight many years ago, who some listeners may remember was a very prominent player for Sussex and later for Durham. And he was a dynamic batsman. I mean, he was before his time. He was ahead of his time in the way that he batted. I remember him getting down on one knee and sweeping me for sort of four or six over deep square leg. And I know people will think, well, that was a fairly sort of common occurrence. But actually, not too many people did that in the 1980s. And he would put one leg down and sweep you over deep square leg as a faster bowler. What the great thing about him was, he was at Sedbergh School, where Harry Brooke went as a 16-year-old, I think. And he got up at 6 in the morning to throw balls for Harry. And it's just a lovely story to hear that investment in someone really coming to fruition like it has.
Here's a question, Yoz. Might be slightly controversial. Does Ben Stokes get in England's T20 side?
That's a very good question. And I've been thinking about that. And I think the problem with Stokes is that England haven't found the right role for him with the bat. Or, in fact, neither have the various franchises he's played for. He's tried for the Rajasthan Royals. He's played for Pune Supergiants in the past as well. And they tried him as an opener, the Royals, and it didn't really work. They put him down the order and it took him a bit too much time to get going. It's not easy because I think that in his past incarnation as a T20 player, he needed a bit of time to get going. And he wasn't very good at working the ball around and rotating the strike. He was either a dot or a four or six. And maybe because of his sort of change of style in Test cricket, that might have enhanced his possibilities in T20 because it's shown his ability to get going quite early on and maybe to rotate the strike a bit more as well and play a sort of back seat occasionally. So I would see him potentially as a possible five or six, but I'm not going to absolutely go for it. I would prefer Harry Brook at the moment. Whether you could say he could play at seven as an alternative to someone like Chris Wokes, maybe as an alternative to Moeen Ali if the ball's not going to turn. So they want an extra seamer. But his batting and bowling records in T20 are not actually that good when you relate it to the standard of the rest of the England squad.
They've actually got some quite difficult decisions to make because, you know, some players have been unfit, haven't they? You know, like Chris Wokes, he's been out for most of the season. He's come back and done, you know, reasonably well in the opportunities he's had in this Pakistan series. Mark Wood, it's clear that they've just eased him back in. And when he has played in a couple of matches, he's been dynamic, actually. He's picked up six wickets and he's bowled the speed of light. And, of course, no, Josh Butler hasn't played any cricket, and Liam Livingstone, you know, has been injured as well. So that, you know, and Ben Stokes has not been in Pakistan. So there are some players to fiddle around with and try to slot in or not slot in, as the case may be. And they've got those three matches against Australia before the first game against Afghanistan. And you need to get it right with the T20 World Cup because there aren't many second chances. You know, that's what makes it, I think, a compelling tournament, is that every match just about counts. And you know, you lose one, you're under real pressure to qualify for the semi-finals. But I suppose at least they've got options, definitely. But it's not obvious, I would say, what England's 11 is going to be for their opening game.
Bowling wise, I'm slightly more concerned. I think batting wise, they've got lots of fantastic attacking options with amazing strike rates. But bowling, I think Rhys Topley's probably confirmed his spot. He can still disappear, and bowling at the death, he's not always that effective. And I think the problem there is because he's so tall. If the ball isn't a perfect Yorker, even a half volley will have enough elevation on it from his height for the batsman to get underneath it. So not easy for him to bowl at the death. And that's where England's sort of potential fragility, weakness lies, with no Jofra Archer. And I'm not convinced that Chris Wokes is really secure at the death either. So they have to find someone to do that. I mean, maybe Mark Wood could be one.
Well, it's Chris Jordan.
The other, but...
It's Chris Jordan to come back
Jordan's
in as well.
A bit hit and miss.
Yeah, I mean, he's another one that's been injured as well. He's another one that's been injured.
I like Chris Jordan, obviously, and you know, he's a fantastic cricketer. Mm. The trouble with bowling at the death is it's so difficult to be consistent.
Yeah,
because just a foot out and you've gone for three sixes off the over, and the umpires are so harsh on those wide Yorkers and the ball's down the leg side. And I suppose the one thing in the bowler's favour in Australia will be the boundaries will be a bit bigger.
Yeah.
Some of the time. But
let's hope so. I mean, they might, you know, they might bring them in. But the grounds are big enough, aren't they? Or some, you know, some of them are potentially big enough, yeah. And that leads me on to Adil Rashid, who actually hasn't had a great series in Pakistan. Did well today, one for 25. Hasn't had a great series. Do you have any concerns about him? Because he's absolutely crucial to England's sort of T20 makeup balance, isn't he?
Well, I mean, the role model for leg spinners in T20 is Rashid Khan, and he's just incredibly consistent. And I think the reason is because he bowls flat. He bowls fast. and he bowls slightly short of a length, so you can't get down the wicket. I think that Adil Rashid has got the same deception as Rashid Khan, probably more actually, but he hasn't quite got that pace. And if he does give it any air at all, you know, batsmen whack him. But he does have a good deception, and he understands the art of bowling. And I don't think he's much more composed probably than he was a few years ago as well. So I don't have too many worries about him. I just hope that he gets some pitches which have a little bit of purchase, because it's pretty tough if it's not going to turn.
Yeah. I mean, just on Moeen, who captained England in all seven matches and actually their first series win this year in T20 cricket, which is a good time to get it with the T20 World Cup not far away. He's not actually guaranteed of his place in the side either, is he, in Australia? It's not a given that he'll play.
No. But he's used to that, isn't he? Mm. So it'll be all about... I mean, of course, T20 becoming more and more a numbers game, isn't it? Mathematics and the analysts looking at it and looking at matchups and how many left-handers have the opposition got and where can we employ Moeen effectively? I mean, he only bowled one over today when the left-handers were in. But he's used to sort of floating in and out of the team. That's his absolutely magnificent value. And he can come in without having played and smack 50 or 30 balls. So, I mean, he is such a... He's probably the most majestic, with Butler, he's the most majestic timer of a ball I think I've ever seen. Would you agree?
Yeah. Right, he's played some lovely innings in this series and, advanced his case as well. You know, he's captained the side and looked calm and guided England to a series win. I mean, perhaps before we move on, Yoz, we should say, one thing, it's actually great that England are back in Pakistan. It's been successful. We know what happened a year ago when England pulled out at the last minute and that created a lot of bad feeling. I think, that rift has been healed. Seven matches, really well attended, some compelling cricket at times. Okay, England won the last two. And today, you probably wanted a really tight game. There were a couple of belting games in the middle. There was that incredible double century partnership. There's been some stunning hitting from England's batters. And all in all, it's probably sort of whetted the appetite for England going back to Pakistan in December and playing that Test
series.
Definitely.
I think it's blazed a trail. And I think it's been wonderful to see the support, the fanaticism, the passion, the following, just the general fervour around cricket and the happiness that England are there. And actually, I applaud Pakistan for constantly producing excellent cricketers as well. I mean, OK, they've been outgunned in the last couple of games, but they competed pretty well before that. And if you think that England have had the advantage of not only, all their resources and their money, etc., and the 100 and things like that, but also a lot of these England players have played IPL cricket, which is the kind of, obviously, the pinnacle of T20. And none of the Pakistan players have ever had the opportunity to play that. They've played Big Bash and they played their own Pakistan league and so on, but they've never had the opportunity to play in the IPL, which I think is the sort of almost the finishing school for T20. And they still produce fantastic. I mean, Babar Azam, what a player he is. And Harris Ralph, I mean, he's going to be, he could be one of the bowlers of the tournament in the World T20, I reckon. Mm. And he came through a talent search in Pakistan. He wasn't even heard of when he was 16.
Yeah. And actually, just a final word on this. You mentioned that, where various players have played. Of course, I think it's probably helped England as well that quite a few of their players have played in the Pakistan Super League. So they the conditions were not alien to them. They were reasonably familiar.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper?
a woo-hoo-er, a hand clapper, a high-fiver. I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions.
18 plus. So back home, we've had a very interesting last week of the championship. Actually, I was absolutely riveted by that final day's play at Edgbaston, Simon, where Warwickshire were playing Hampshire, and Warwickshire didn't really have much of a chance of victory. And there was that incredible spell by Liam Norwell. Took 9 for 62. And thank God for county streams, because you could watch it all live. And my old colleague Kevin James from Middlesex was one of the commentators, getting all excited. Sam, you were kind of, your game was rained off actually, so because Middlesex got promotion almost by default, because you got a draw out of that last match at Worcester and kept Glamorgan at bay in third place, so you were second, Notts were first. But I guess you might have had a bit of a chance to watch some of that Warwickshire game, did you?
Yeah, we actually did. We had it on the stream just for a little bit when Nick Gubbins was batting, obviously a former Middlesex player, and he's good friends with quite a few of us still. So yeah, we watched a little bit of that, and yeah, that was an amazing finish. Yeah, I mean, to take 9 for like Liam Norwell did, yeah, so once in a career, amazing effort really. But to do it on such an important day was incredible. Really, and I think there were a few other good games all over the place as well, weren't there? So yeah, it was definitely a fascinating sort of final week for county cricket.
Stunning, really, for Yorkshire, because they were controlling that match against Gloucestershire in the first part of it, and it looked like they were going to get a decent first innings lead, and then, you know, Gloucestershire just somehow managed to sort of stay in the game. Of course, they had such a poor season, Gloucestershire, no wins at all, and lo and behold, they win their last two games. They dragged Warwickshire down in the penultimate game, and then they dragged Yorkshire right down. I mean, it was an incredible turnaround. I mean, I don't think, sort of with a couple of days left of the championship season, you'd have had Yorkshire going down. You'd probably have had, you know, Warwickshire, you know, almost certain to go down. But I mean, to defend 139 in those dramatic circumstances on the final day of the season. I mean, there have been some dramatic final days, not least the when Middlesex won the title actually a few years back when they beat Yorkshire. I mean, that was another dramatic day. But I mean, the championship seems to throw them up. What's the season been like? We'll talk about, you know, the future of the championship. What's the season been like? It's been a very dry, seems to me, Sam, a very dry season. I mean, have the pitches been better? I mean, I suppose it depends where you play. The weather's been hot. The balls have been a bit iffy. What's it been like?
Yeah, I think as all those things you touched on there, I think in comparison to recent years, definitely as a batsman, it's been noticeable. Obviously, the weather, we were lucky, weren't we? We had a great, great warm summer. And even I think the weather through April and May was good too. So that stood out. And I think, you know, obviously we saw, you know, some higher scoring games and more runs being scored than in previous years and whatever, which as a batsman is good to see. But I think in general, you know, we saw some better games. I know as a Middlesex player, the last few years, we've had, you know, we had a lot of, you know, 3-day finishes over the past 3-4 seasons. We still had a few this year, which you do get in English cricket, with the conditions and whatever, but there were a lot more sort of longer, drawn out, hard, old-fashioned games of 4-day cricket really, which was good to see. And I think that's when the best players stand up, and I think that's over a longer period of time, you'll see the better bowlers come through, and you'll see the better batsmen batting for longer periods of time, getting big scores and putting their hand up. So yeah, it was enjoyable. There obviously has been a lot of just discussion about the schedule and whatever. There were still a couple of funny blocks. It was interesting for us at Middlesex. We only had a couple of guys involved at the 100, and the 50 over competition, we were close to qualifying, but we lost to Sussex in the middle of August in our final game. And that meant we didn't get into a semi-final. And that left us with about 3.5 weeks, I think, before our next game of cricket. So that was slightly unusual. Well, it was very unusual actually, because the weather through all of August was outstanding. And then we had a 3.5 week break there. We were sort of just sitting around waiting to play. You went from one extreme to the other. It was so tiring, and you felt like you were playing every second or third day. And then And then nothing for a few weeks. I think that.
What did you do, Sam? What did you do during that period? Did you just sort of net and just tick over and get a bit bored, or?
I think quite well, actually, because we finished the last few weeks well, and what we did seemed to work. But yeah, I think we handled it well because we just got away from it. We had a full week and a half away from the game, a full break, and then we practiced hard the week before our Glamorgan game, which was, I think, on the 12th or 13th of September. So there might have been a temptation to carry on and keep training, practicing and whatever, but I think our coaching staff felt that it was probably right just to have a complete break and then go again, which worked. So, yeah.
One thing, Sam, people say, we shouldn't play county cricket in April and May. But it seems to me in recent years, and because of better drainage and covering the pitches and all that sort of stuff, that actually is possible to play in April and May. What was it like? What were the pitches like in April and May? Were they any different from, I don't know, later in the season or a bit later in the season? Were they noticeably juicier or were you playing on some quite dry pitches?
No, I think in general I find often. I mean, it depends on the weather. And I think the other thing is these days, maybe in comparison to recent times, is the lights mean that you play a lot. So even if conditions are dark and sort of those traditional conditions where it's generally pretty hard for the batsmen. So I think if I take last year, for example, 2021, I think we did a statistic, the boys worked it out. I think through April and May, I think there was only one day at Lords where we batted or where any team batted all day without the lights on. So just because the weather was not as good last year, it meant that conditions were just tougher for the batsmen. And it meant that, obviously, the wickets had more in them because it wasn't hot and it wasn't sunny and it wasn't dry. But also it meant that maybe in years gone by where you might've got off for a session, you were still out there and for whatever reason, the ball seems to move around and dart around all over the place, and it's pretty tough work if you're batting under lights. Whereas this year, April and May, the weather was a bit better. From memory, I missed the first game of the season with injury against Derbyshire, but we then had a couple of low-scoring games at Glamorgan, and then I think we beat Leicestershire at Lords in 3 days. But apart from that, the sun was out, and it meant that, once you did the tough work at the start, the wickets were quite good, and it felt like sort of normal cricket, really. So I think that's a big factor. And then obviously the September factor is the 10:30 starts. There's no doubt that does have a bit of an impact, particularly, the way the weather's been a little bit the last week, it has felt more autumn-y. Obviously there are more wickets falling around the place in the last week or two.
Also the balls, I suppose, had an impact, didn't they, this year? It seemed like the balls kind of coincided with the weather and made it a lot easier for batsmen and harder for bowlers. Did that change over time? Did the balls get a bit better and a bit harder to bat against, or was there no real difference?
I think so. I think there was a bit of discussion. It's probably more the bowlers that talk about it than the batsmen.
But you've got to face it.
Yeah, I think the bowlers, from what the bowlers were saying, I think they felt that the balls got better as the year went on, particularly this last month. And obviously early in the season, that was discussed a lot. So my feel is that it's probably a combination of everything. My gut feel is that if the lights are on and, one team's 50 for five, you're probably not going to change the ball. The bowlers would turn around and say, well, they're 50 for five because the ball's all right. But this year, yeah, I think it was a combination of everything. The balls obviously were discussed a lot early in the season and they weren't great. But, we had some really nice weather and some good dry wickets and, yeah, batters were allowed to flourish.
And before we get on to talking about next year and beyond, Royal London Cup, there were years in the past where you didn't get into the one-day side all that regularly and you were kind of not twiddling your thumbs, but, looking for club cricket or something to play. But this year, I know you had a full go in the Royal London and did really well. What's that like as a competition? Should it continue?
Yeah, we really enjoyed the 50 over competition this year. I think we won five games out of eight and still didn't qualify, which was disappointing, but just the way things sort of went in our group. But yeah, I think it varied across the across the counties, didn't I? I think someone, a side like Surrey, lost a really high proportion of their players. Whereas clubs like us at Middlesex, I think we only had three or four guys away with the 100. So we kept a core group of experienced players, which helped because we had a good balance of experience and young guys. And yeah, it was a really enjoyable competition. You played at more outgrounds, which was good fun. And there were some good crowds. We played Somerset at Taunton on a Sunday in glorious sunshine, and that was a great day. They had a big crowd. It was a good game, and it was good cricket. So yeah, there's been a lot of discussion about what it's going to look like moving forward, but yeah, I like the 50 over game. As you know, personally and selfishly as a batsman, I feel like you can play proper cricket and you know, when you get yourself in, but then you can sort of go and express yourself and play a few shots. So yeah, I enjoyed
it. Slips or gullies hanging around, so you can free your arms a bit. And is there almost a hierarchy in county cricket now with those who are in the 100 and those who are not?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think probably one of the slight unusual things, I suppose, is guys that have done well in the 2020s, and there's always that, and it just is how it is. We had someone like Steve Eskenazi at Middlesex. He had an amazing 50 over competition, and someone like him, I think, would probably feel a bit hard done by not finding a place in the 100 the last few years. So how they manage that, whether, you know, you can kind of, you know, if you perform well in the 2020s, can you get into the 100 basically? And obviously you can, but I suppose there's always that unique scenario where you've got the analyst now, as you mentioned earlier on, you've got overseas coaches, and I think it depends where you play. Naturally, you know, if you're at Northamptonshire or you're somewhere, you know, and you're a little bit out of the way, is it as easy to find a way into the 100 as if you're, you know, you're whacking them at the Oval? So maybe that's something that needs to be looked at.
Shall we look at what the game could look like, should look like in the future? If I gave you a blank piece of paper, Sam, and said, design a cricket season in England. I mean, you played here for many years, and that's quite a tough question, admittedly. What would you put down on that blank piece of paper? And what are the discussions in your changing room at the moment?
Where do we start? Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Obviously, my gut feel for me, being someone who loves the four-day game, and that's my forte, and I think that's the other thing to throw in there, is everyone's got different views, and like everything in life, it depends what your forte is. If you're a 2020 player, you play in the 100, you play all around the world in the 2020 leagues, and that's your go-to. Whether or not there are going to be 8 championship games or 16, it's probably neither here nor there, because it's not going to affect you. The same way that if you're someone like myself and 4-day cricket and 50 over cricket and whatever, that is the priority, and 2020 is not your forte, you probably want to play more cricket. And I think that's probably the side of the fence that I sit on. I think clearly if you played less games, of course the intensity and those sort of things in theory would go up. My gut feel is that 10 in England doesn't feel like it would be enough. I think if you compare it to places like Australia, South Africa, New Zealand, etc., I think even little things like their climate, I think 4-day cricket there generally is probably physically is going to be harder work. So, you know, the weather is better, it's hotter. They're going to get less 3-day finishes. I think if you had had 10 games in England and the weather was, you know, it was a rough summer weather-wise. A couple of games were badly rain affected, and 2 or 3 were over by lunch or tea on the third day. That, I think, you get to the end of the season, and I think you'd feel like that wasn't that much cricket. Maybe if you had 10 in a summer like this year, and everyone was really hard for, and by the end guys are knackered, maybe it would look all right. But yeah, I just feel like 4-day cricket, I think you could play more than 10. I think the structure this year, obviously, it didn't work. You know, they're trying to make it fit in better and work better. I think 14 games is fine if it's managed better and they're spread more evenly across the season. Obviously, doing that with the 100 is tricky.
Yeah. Did it feel? I mean, there was that really intense period of County Cricket. I know you said you missed the first game at the start of the season through injury, but did it feel that those first 5 or 6 weeks, when you know there was 4 day game after 4 day game after 4 day game with the weather quite good, did that feel really sort of really draining for the players? You know, to talk about the quick bowlers, were they able to sort of come back and you know, the next game and give it everything as they had in the previous game?
Yeah, I think it is tough work. And you get to the end of that May period, which we've had the last couple of seasons or last few seasons where you play a lot in April and May, and you do definitely get to the end of that May block and you sort of think, geez, I'm ready for a little break now. So I think guys are definitely, it does take it out of them. So as I said, yeah, but I suppose if it was managed slightly better, so maybe, you know, you didn't play 7 or 8 in a row, but you played 5 or 6 in, I don't know, 8 or 9 weeks, and then you played a little bit more through the summer, as we did this year, to be fair, and then you know, a little bit more in August. That to me would be great, and that would be more sensible. But yeah, for how they're going to do it, it's tricky.
Has anybody actually asked you, or anyone in the team? I mean, you know, Andrew Strauss is obviously a former Middlesex player, and he's basically the architect of this report, or the supervisor of this high performance review. Have you been consulted? Has anybody from Middlesex been consulted? Have you met anyone who's been consulted about it?
As players, we had a discussion a couple of weeks ago with our coaching staff and Alan Coleman, the head of men's performance cricket at the club. We had a bit of a discussion about it as a group of players and whatever. But yeah, if I'm honest, I think most of it is above our head. I'm sure it's being discussed with the directors of cricket and the people that are making the decisions at the clubs. And obviously there's been the PCA, sort of the surveys in recent years and whatnot.
Yeah, we know about PCA surveys. They're a very honourable idea, but in the past, I remember no one ever actually... If you tried to get anyone to sort of vote for the player of the year or any particular changes in the game, you've got about 12 replies. Maybe players are better now, I don't know.
Yeah, I think they've probably been a bit better in recent years. But as I said, yeah, it's been discussed amongst the players a little bit the last month or two. But yeah, I think most of the main stuff is getting done above us.
So what about the idea of three divisions, one a first division and then two divisions of six, or two second divisions? How does that feel? Does it feel, I don't know, over-managing the situation, or does it feel something that might be viable?
Yeah, I think obviously that the first division, that will be you know, really strong, good, hard-fought cricket. I suppose the one thing which I would have, which is a bit of a concern, and perhaps that's probably what they want to happen, but perhaps, is that if you're stuck in Division 2, if you're a Middlesex player through and through, or, you know, you've grown up in Worcester or whatever, and you want to play for Worcester for your career, and you want to play for England, even if you do very well in that second division as a side, you still need the stars to align, because I think it looked like you'd have to win your conference or your side of Division 2 and then perhaps even win a final. Am I right?
I think that's the plan. Yeah. Yeah.
But that to me, that's, you know, you could be lingering in Division 2 for a long time, and equally that can be the case now. But I definitely feel with promotion and relegation at the moment, with two up, two down, you feel like, you know, it's achievable. If you play well for a couple of years and you play good cricket and you're up there, it's very achievable. Whereas I think, yeah, winning your division and then still having to win a final, that could be interesting. And then that obviously brings in movement of players. If you're stuck in one of the Division 2 sides, and, you know, take the example, someone at a club like Worcester or whatever, who are going to be in Division 2 next year, then, you know, and you really want to play for England, you want to play in that Premier Division. Okay, on one hand, yeah, great. Well, that's how it should be. You go and play for the Division 1 side, but clearly that's going to change the dynamics of county cricket, you know, big time, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it would. Yeah. What about this idea of sort of, you know, you said you didn't play much in August and you had a bit of a break. What about this idea of some sort of festival cricket or, you know, almost like new competitions, like a local derby or a London Cup, or, I mean, how would that sit? Would that feel as intense, as playing in the Championship, the proper competitions, if you like?
I don't think it would. No, is my honest answer. I think naturally, once those games started and you're out there and whatever, it's first class cricket, and I think they would be quite good games on one hand, because yeah, they'd be, you know, you'd be probably playing them at outgrounds. Or, you know, generally, I think a lot of them would be out at a club like Middlesex. We would be playing at an outground because we wouldn't be using Lords with the 100. For spectators and whatever, I'm sure if you were there, they'd be good games. I think they're talking about potentially have local derbies and whatnot. But if they're not part of the Championship, I think it would lack a little bit of something, obviously. So that wouldn't be my preference. I believe if there's had to be something sitting under the 100, I think the way it worked this year with having the 50 over competition probably seems more appropriate to me. But, you know, there still are guys in the dressing room that have said, no, you need to play 50 over games because there's a World Cup and you want to play for England. You want to play for England in 50 over, perform well in those games as well. So it's a very tricky one. But, yeah, I'm not sure. First class matches which aren't part of the Championship, I'm not quite sure how well that would go.
Just on a personal note, Sam, I couldn't help but notice the final game of the Championship that you were out for naught and then your team got 500. What is that like to sit there while, you know, cricket is such a cruel game, isn't it? And, you know, one ball, you've got your name on it, you go early, especially as an opener in England, and then the other lot rack up 500. What's that like?
Well, it's boring. That's definitely one word I'd use. I was thinking about that the other day, actually. I was thinking I've got a lot of noughts in my time and I'll be getting a fair few more as long as I keep opening the batting, I'm sure. But I'm not quite sure whether I've got nought in a total of 500 before. I don't think so. So it was personally not the best game, but... But obviously amazing to go up. And it was a strange game, actually, because I think the way the wicket was, we didn't see that sort of a score coming at all.
It was a slow burn, wasn't it? I mean, it was like 130 for five and things like that. And then it suddenly grew and grew. So what do you do to kill time? You were at Worcester, staring out at the cathedral, wishing God had smiled more kindly on you, I suppose. How do you kill time?
Yeah, not too much. Read the paper. Watch the boys bat, do a few laps of the ground with a couple of the boys. And that's about it, really. And then
visit the cake stall?
No, not the cake stall this way. I think normally I try and get an ice cream if there's an ice cream van, but it was a bit cold in Worcester this week. I think it was only about 12 degrees each day, so it wasn't ice cream weather. But, yeah, so that's normally my go-to.
Well, listen, I guess you will be listening out for the selection of England's Test squad for Pakistan with just a sort of tiny sliver of hope that you might get a mention. But if not, because you've obviously been talked about in dispatches as a potential opener for England in Tests. If not, what's your winter plan?
Yeah, I think probably a quiet couple of months. Middlesex normally go back to training in November. So we'll do a fair bit of the fitness stuff and whatever we do these days in November time. And then I'm going to go to Sydney in the middle of December and play grade cricket there. So I've kept doing that. I've done that the last couple of years anyway, which has been good. So I sort of feel like playing a little bit in January and February is a nice sort of lead into the season over here. You sort of come back feeling like you're not starting out, but it's just sort of a bit of a roll on really from batting and of the seasons. So that's my plan. And yeah, it should be good.
That's a bloody nice prospect, actually. Going to play, I did that exact thing. I remember going to play in the Sydney grade team in sort of November, December, January, and it's a lovely escape from the pressure of county cricket and also the weather in England. But there is a pressure associated with playing as a sort of prime overseas player in a grade team, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. And I think we've got a few guys going out this year to play in. Playing Australia, which is good because I think with COVID in recent years, it's been a bit harder for guys to get away, which has been not ideal. But as I said, there's a few doing it this year, which is good. And yeah, they train hard, they practice hard, and you know, the guys are always up for on a Saturday. So as you said, there's pressure to do well. And, you know, when you're only getting half a dozen bats in 2 months, you want to make it count when you get out there. So yeah, it is good. And I think also one of the other things, which I think is nice, is getting away from and sort of just a change of scenery, really. And I think when you get back in March time for pre-season and to prepare for the English season, you are a bit reinvigorated. You're seeing sort of your teammates again for the first time in a few months rather than seeing them every day through the winter as well. So I think it is a nice preparation.
Well, listen, thanks very much for your time and congrats on the season. It's great to see. And you delivered on that final match. Well, I suppose you didn't lose it anyway, which was the key thing, and got the bonus points. So well done. And it's good to see, you know, First Division cricket back at Lords next summer. It'll be really exciting.
Well, yeah, thanks to Sam for joining us, and you know, very good luck with your winter. I mean, it does sound enviable, doesn't it, going off to play cricket in Australia. What a lovely thing to be able to go and do.
And for you, Simon, it means you could wear shorts all year round as well, of
exactly,
course.
Exactly. Yeah.
Except when you're on the field, yeah. Which I know so that's your aim in life, isn't it? I mean, you need to go and live in Greece or somewhere, really.
You're right. Well, we were out in Australia last summer for the Ashes. We were out there for 9 weeks. Well, we were in Sydney for about 3 weeks, and it rained just about every day we were there.
So it rains more there than it does here at the moment.
Yeah. Well, your good friend Jim Maxwell, you know, our Test Match Special colleague and ABC colleague, he always says, did you know it always rains more in I can't do an Australian accent. I can't do Jim's accent, actually. But it rains more in Sydney than it does in Manchester.
Is that right?
And I think that's statistically correct.
We'll have people writing in about that, suggesting whether that's true or not. Anyway, well, let's hope it doesn't rain when you're out there, Sam. You can get some good practice. We are going to take a few days off, I think, but we'll be back to preview the World T20s, which starts on the 16th of October. And, of course, England are in Australia shortly. So we'll be back with some reviews and previews of those T20 games. And, Simon, hopefully you find something to do. I'm going to be employing the Green Goddess, that lady who comes on to Breakfast TV, to do some really pathetic exercises to see if I can get my hit back in shape and hopefully pace like fire next summer. Well, at least 55 miles an hour anyway. So thanks all for listening. Thanks for your best wishes, everybody, and see you soon.
Good luck with the rehab, Yoz.
Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.